I think the movement, for example, in the Northern District, I mean, we certainly have a set of categories now where what is presumed live, what is presumed hybrid, mm-hmm. what is presumed all virtual. But I think that where we're moving and where, you know, candidly I practice kind of day to day is that almost all hearings are hybrid. If someone says, you know, either my client would like to dial in or anyone would like to dial in, we always turn the WebEx on. And most days outside of like adversary proceedings, it's probably on anyway. So we definitely do both live and virtual. I mean, I certainly prefer live hearings. I can't lie. I think the quality of the presentation and the argument is always better, mm-hmm. you know, live rather than virtual. One of the things that I think is just that you kind of can't recreate virtual is the hallway conference, right? The abilities for people to be going at it and in a contested hearing and then, like I said, take that recess and then talk. So every now and then, especially if we have a lot of virtual, it's like, I'm going to take a 25-minute recess. You're going to get on the phone with each other and, you know, you're going to talk. And that's, I think that's a little bit of a lost art in doing a lot virtual. But with that said, you can't argue with the efficiencies for the uncontested hearings, a lot for our consumer practice. I mean, if there's any folks that shouldn't be taken off of work, you know, mm-hmm. to come to hearings, I think it's those debtors, obviously for out of town counsel, for first days.
Right.
You know, the efficiency for first days is there. So I believe it's certainly here to stay. And if I were to compare it to a telephonic appearance, I think it's heads and shoulders. I like the virtual.
Absolutely. Is there anything you do in particular to try to help keep a hybrid hearing fair to participants, some of whom are in the room and some of whom aren't?
I'll usually, we have ours set up to where those folks, we use WebEx, similar to Zoom, mm-hmm. Can see the podium and the witness box and the judge, whether they like that or not. And so usually what I'll do is I try to get people not to talk from counsel table. It is picked up by the mics. It won't be picked up by the camera. Mm-hmm. So I'll try to do that. Other than that, I really haven't had much of an experience where folks just don't feel that it's fair.
Okay.
I'm very, very patient when we have virtual gremlins. Mm-hmm. I'll take the recess. I'll make sure that we do whatever we can to make sure that they have good quality audio, video. Of course, there's just those days when there's a gremlin. And I'll get them to turn their camera off and, you know, everything, audio improve and things like that. So I'm typically pretty patient with folks. And so I haven't seen the experience of, you know, someone's there live and they've, you know, get that, you know, tremendous benefit.
Going back to your comment about, you know, being able to push people into a room, mm-hmm. Judge King, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts. The judge in a bankruptcy court, you know, is the shepherd of a case in a unique way. I think it is part of what draws a lot of us to the practice is the liveliness of that courtroom experience. How do you think about whether and when to take a more active role in a case, when to kind of weigh in on an issue that may not be directly in front of you or try to push the parties into that room?
I try to let the lawyers try their own case. I don't tell them. Sometimes they ask, well, Judge, what would you like to hear? And this, I'm like, it's your case. You tell me. So I let the lawyers try their own case. They can put on their evidence if they choose to. They can do a proffer, whatever they want to do, documentary evidence. But when it starts dragging, lagging, they're not getting to the point, then I may intervene. So the rules of evidence allow me to question any witness. And so frequently I'll have questions for the witness. The rules of evidence also allow me to call a witness if I so choose, and I have done that. Sometimes they'll be dancing around some issue and the key witness, the debtor or someone else is sitting in the courtroom like, why don't you call him? I'm calling him right now. So I've actually done that. Another case, I had appraisers that were so widely divergent, both MAI, licensed appraisers. One was $4 million, one was like $20 million. I appointed my own appraiser at the cost of the parties. They had to split the cost. That's also allowed by the federal rules of evidence. So these are rare instances. I'm not saying we do this every day or every year even, but these are the kinds of things that sometimes you need to do. Sometimes I'll say, I need the note. I need the deed of trust. I mean, they're dancing around the issues and they're not putting the key exhibits in evidence. And so I ask them to put them in evidence, or I guess I could offer my own exhibit. I haven't done that yet, but I have called witnesses and I do have a lot of questions for witnesses. But like I said, if the lawyers are competent and doing their jobs, as most do, I mean, 99% do, I'm going to let them try their case. But if it's taken too long and they're not getting to the point, it's possible that I might just take over.
So you'd say it's a little bit, it's kind of how things are dragging on. If you're feeling like the progress just isn't there, you're just seeing the same kind of contention again and again.